Blog Talk Radio.
To the radio voice of Eastern Wyoming. We're glad you're with us. As you can tell, we enjoy talking about our favorite company, Eastern, both old and new. Our only purpose is to bring you news of Eastern, both past and present. You may also hear a song or two selected by our producer that enjoyed popularity during the days Eastern, too, was popular as the preferred airline by the traveling public. So much so that it became the largest passenger-carrying airline in the free world. The legacy of Eastern is carried forward by people like you, tuning in each week to share those memories. Those regulars on the show each week try to do exactly that by sharing their own memories. Neil, who do you see there on the producer's board?
Well, as usual, it seems like we have a full board of area codes. We don't have names, but we have area codes. So we talk to our guests and those that want to talk with us by area code, and hoping they will identify themselves on our show. But we've got our board full tonight. Those regulars that are on our show, Jim Hart is off tonight. We gave him the night off. Let's see, we gave Chuck Albright also. Jim Hart is on his way up to Martha's Vineyard, where we will learn all about Martha's Vineyard for the next few months while Jim and Trudy enjoy that area. And Chuck Albright is normally with us from the Villages in Central Florida, but he's headed south, I think, to Miami. I'm not certain what the reason was, he told me, but I'm not certain why. But then we have folks up in the New York area, like, let's see, I think we have George Jen. George, how are you, and how are things in the New York area?
I'm fine, Neil. Thank you for asking. And today feels like March up here again. The high for the day was about 54 degrees with 25 knots of wind out of the northeast. But hopefully in the next couple of days it will return to summer. Back to you, Neil.
Okay. That sounds like a great temperature, 59, especially for those of us that are putting up with the 90s. And
I'll take it.
The only temperature probably beats that is way out in Colorado where Bill Joseph, and we'll find that temperature in just a minute when we talk with Bill. George, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
No, I said I'll take that 90-degree temperature anytime. We had a rough winter.
Don't know about that. At any rate, glad you're with us. And Frank, you're also in the same area. Frank Segnor, are you with us tonight? Oh, haven't heard from Frank in a while, or either I haven't opened his microphone up. Let's come on down a little bit further south and go into the Carolinas. And there we have Steve Thompson. Steve, say hello and tell us about your backyard, which is a golf course, I believe.
Yes, it is, Neil, and we are having the little rain shower now, which is welcomed, and the rain has brought out the flowers on the parkway more beautiful than anyone can ever remember seeing. It is just absolutely beautiful. And, Jill, I'm sure that you've seen some of them over your way also, but we tried to keep them all over here. But it has just been a beautiful weather up here. So please come see us.
John Reinhart, is Steve telling the truth?
He is telling the truth, and I'm telling you, the mountain laurels, the dogwoods, everything is just absolutely gorgeous. So y'all come on down.
Are the rhododendrons in bloom?
Not yet. No, they're a little later.
A little later, that's right. Yeah, beautiful flowers in that part of the country. Okay, well, let's go on down to Jill Cotton in Asheville, North Carolina. Very similar terrain there. Tell us all about it, Jill.
Very similar. Well, I have to chuckle because if Steve thinks he's going to keep it all, he's got another thing coming because it gets to me before it gets to him. That rain shower you just having, we had it a couple hours ago. Back to you, Neil.
Okay. All right. Well, we're getting some rain here. I guess I'm next up. Gay, are you with us? Gay Harvey? No, I think Gay had to be out of town. Let's see. I guess Jim Graybill, are you with us? No? So I guess I'm next up. I'm here halfway between St. Augustine, America's oldest city, and Calford, Florida used to be called Jacksonville, Florida used to be called Calford, Cowford, Florida, and then they changed the name to Jacksonville. Wonder why. But they said that cows used to ford the St. John's River at the neck of the river there downtown Jacksonville. So, but somebody got the name of Jacksonville, and I suppose it's named after Andrew Jackson or someone like that. But coming on down a little bit further south, I guess the next one, since Chuck is away, it would be Cecile Intriago. I see you there, Cecile. Wave your hand.
I'm here in Fort Lauderdale. It's in the 90s, and I wish it was in the 50s. It's too hot. I'm going to go with Jim and Trudy to Martha's Vineyard. Back to you, Neil.
Really? Are you? Did you get an invitation that we didn't get?
I have an invitation, and I'm going to try to make it this year.
You
are. I want
to.
That lobster. I will.
Okay. Very good. Well, we would skip across the state and go to Bill Joseph next, but Bill Joseph has left the Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater, Tarpon Springs, or whatever area over there he lives in. And now he's way out there in the mountains of Colorado. And hello, Bill. How's the weather in Colorado?
Hi, Neil. How are you? Actually, I'm only about 4,500 feet above sea level. That's not real high for out here in Colorado. 19 miles east of the Utah border. We hit 92 today, and like I told you, the humidity was less than 20%, so you don't feel it quite as bad as you do there in Florida. Back to you, Neil.
Okay. Well, let's see. That leaves us with this little song here that I hope we can introduce our guest tonight, and she's been with us now, I think, for three consecutive shows, and I'm going to see if I can find something in our little music file, but does this little ditty ring a bell?
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to LA, more than 2,000 miles all the way.
I think we all know where it goes to LA. And so before we turn it over and we find out how Mary Block is doing on that wonderful trip on Route 66. Bill, yours. And Oklahoma City looks mighty pretty, you'll
see. Well, I wonder if we can catch up with our sisters on the Fly Travelers this week. Neil, can you spot Mary Block's area code on the producer's board?
Hi,
yeah,
Neil.
I sure have. I've done it, and there she is.
Can you hear me?
Mary, I hear you loud and clear. Thank you for being with us tonight. Tell us all about it, where you are, and how much fun you're having.
We are having a ball. We just pulled into Barstow, California. Last week when we were talking, when we said we were on our way to Santa Fe, that was early the next morning. But we've really made some headway since then. We went to Santa Fe, had a great time, on to Gallup, New Mexico, then crossed over into Arizona to Williams and Kingman. And now we just pulled into Barstow, and we've picked up many more sisters. And just great things to see in all the places. And, of course, coming across the border from Arizona into California and just going up through the mountains. And it is absolutely mind-boggling. It is so majestic and so beautiful. At the same time, you have to keep a heads up. We lost one sister's trailer yesterday morning. She got caught in a wind gust, and she jackknifed and rolled over a couple times. But,
ooh.
I mean, we had to take her to the hospital and that, but she was okay. I mean, you know, nothing life-threatening, but her little playhouse on wheels was just totally lost. But it's coming through some of those passes. It gets very windy. You've got to watch your speed. You've got to watch for a number of things, and it was just one of those things that happened. But she's healthy and safe, and that's all that's important. So,
absolutely.
Anyway... all the stops along Route 66, if any of y'all listening ever think you might want to go places, not the whole route, but even just parts of it, taking the old route, there are amazing, lovely people who keep businesses going and gift shops and fun little restaurant stops, and they're just delightful. And because the tourists come, it keeps them going, and it keeps a part of Americana just flowing along. I have to say it's been an amazing trip. We leave from here tomorrow, and we're headed to the Ventura County Fairgrounds in Ventura County, which is about 50 miles away from where we're really going to end up at the Santa Monica Pier. But it was the only place that could accommodate 300 of our little vintage campers. So... we'll be there until Friday, and it will be the end of our magical trip across country. And it's just been really an unbelievable time, meeting unbelievable people and having unbelievable memories. And the temperature here in Barstow, it's 94 degrees. The wind is 21 miles per hour, and it's 7 degrees humidity, 7% humidity.
Wow. Man, that's great. Well, folks, listening to Mary, I don't know of any place else, any other media that you can find a firsthand report of people having fun like the sisters on the fly. Mary, perhaps you can give a plug for your organization again. Can you tell us about the organization and how people can, especially ladies, because we men cannot make application. Can you tell us again how they can have as much fun as you're having?
Absolutely. Go to the Sisters on the Fly website, www.sistersonthefly.com. It tells you all about it, shows you where to sign up. It is the largest outdoor adventure group of women that just, you know, they love to travel, they love to fish, they love to ride horses, whatever your shtick is, you will find people of like-mindedness, and they get their little playhouses on wheels, and you don't have to have one. I mean, you know, for a number of years, I didn't. I mean, I had what I knew, what I wanted in my mind, what I was going to do and call it, and I had all my Eastern memorabilia, and because Sisters on the Fly had Fly in the name,
that's where I came up with a few years ago, my little Eastern flyer. So, because I always thought, well, I'll fly down the highways. So, anyway, it's a great organization. It's a lot of fun. You can do as little or as much as you want, and it's from 21 until whatever. We had a lady, and I say a lady, who's really cool. She joined a few weeks ago, 87 years old. I mean, you know, we've got them in the 20s to the 80s. It's just a really cool opportunity to just get out there and do things you want to do and play like you're a little girl again or a little cowgirl or whatever. It's just fun.
Now, when you get to your final destination, do you circle the wagons, all 300 of them, and there you have 103 candidates for the President of the United States? Groups talking to you?
No, actually, when we get to Ventura, what we do is we have decorations that we decorate our little campers with. Most of the girls do, some won't, but like I will give out all of my Eastern memorabilia, and in the kitchen I'll have my Eastern coffee cups hanging, and then I'll set the table, the little table in the camper with the china and the silver and the crystal, and I always, you know, will tell somebody, well, you're going to get first-class service when you peek your head in here, and just fun things. And everybody has theirs decorated with a different theme, and you just enjoy each other and spend the last few days together because, Neil, when we say goodbye to some of these girls, we're never going to see them again. I mean, because they've come from all over the United States, and we'll turn around. Now, those of us that are back east, we'll turn around and start caravanning. I'll be in the Las Vegas caravan because I'll have family members coming to get me, just as most of the gals will have family members or friends coming to meet them, because we really don't like people traveling by themselves, although there are some sisters who are very comfortable with doing that. I'm not one of them. I like safety in numbers, but we'll all be heading back to our different respective points, homes where we started from. And but the one plug I do want to say for any ladies thinking of joining, we have huge groups all over the country where Jill is in the Carolinas and Georgia and Tennessee and down into Florida. And we have meetups to get together and do things. It's really a lot of fun. Whether you're in the Northeast or the South or the Midwest or out West, there are sisters for you.
Mary and Neil, may I say something?
Sure, Jill.
Oh, okay. After your first broadcast, Mary, one of Eastern former flight attendants, Joan, and she lives out in Temecula, California. Of course, we were Facebooking at the same time as we were having the program, and she joined immediately.
Oh, good.
So I'm going to Facebook her back tonight while we're doing the program to let her know that you're going to be at the Ventura County Fairgrounds. Okay, Ventura County Fairgrounds.
Yes, it's right now it's like closed to the public per se because it's got so many people there. I'm not exactly sure what the schedule is. I'll learn when I get there. And Neil can give you my phone number and email, and I'll get back with you, babe, because I would love to meet her, too, if she's just a hop, skip, and a jump.
Well, I have to chuckle because she also posted on her on the Facebook page that she has a VW wagon or whatever they were called, and she's all ready to go.
Oh, God, I can't wait to meet her.
Well, you know,
so it's amazing.
Go ahead,
Jill. Go ahead. Oh, no, go ahead, Neil.
Well, it was so fun, even knowing that I couldn't join. I went to the Internet and looked up that Shasta 1960 that Mary Block has to see how much they cost now. And believe it or not, you can still buy 1960 Shastas, but they're classics.
Oh, my.
because they've got the
yeah.
little wings on the side, like Mary explained to us. And but it's so nice. It's kind of like a Coleman tent, I guess, but on wheels. But there are more than just Shastas among the caravan that goes west. You've got all sorts of trailers,
oh,
I guess.
Scotties, all kinds of stuff. All kinds
Airstreams.
Of little
I guess
campers.
You got Airstreams,
oh,
too.
Airstreams, we do. You know, just something cute, though, Neil. I was going through Needles, California, and one of my sisters, as I was pulling off, she followed me into the gas station, and she said, Mary, your right light is out. And so I pulled in, and the mechanic, I talked with him, and I found out that my blinker and my light wasn't working. And so we stopped there while he took a look, assessed, and fixed everything. And it was, I came time to pay him, and I said, okie dokie, what do I owe you? And he said, you don't owe me anything. And I said, oh, no, sir, you just spent some time getting me roadworthy. And he said, ma'am, he said, I am so pleased with all you women coming through here. I just love you guys stopping. And I said, okay, I'm going to tell everybody that's going on Interstate 40 West. It's the Shell station in Needles, California. And if you need to get off, buy your gas there, because these guys, they were just great.
I would at least ask for a hug and a kiss.
Oh, honey, I hug everybody along the way. Anybody that knows Mary Blount knows you get a hug and a hug and a hug.
Sounds like you're having a great time, Mary. You think, let's see, June, what date will you be pulling into L.A.?
We pull into the Ventura County Fairgrounds tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, okay.
So we'll be there from there until Friday morning. Or Friday by noon, we'll all be leaving to head back to our parts of the country. So I'll start heading east then.
Well, be safe.
And the party's over.
Be safe. No, the party's not over until you get back home. There's a lot of distance between you and Chicago area. So, no, Tennessee. I believe you're living in Tennessee, aren't you, Mary?
Right. Tennessee is my home state. I spend a lot of time in St. Louis because that's where I
yeah.
was raised. And I also like to plug St. Louis because it's a great city.
Well, on your way back, we're going to be looking for that phone number. And if I see it there, you're going to be with us and letting us know how the trip is coming back and telling us a little bit about that great gathering, circling of the wagons there in L.A. And
have you been checking out, Neil, that retro Route 66 that the photographer put up that I sent you? Had you had a chance to look at that?
Yeah, I sure have.
Okay, good.
And the quality of her photography is really great. And make a great coffee book collection of pictures. And that's the way I would probably present it. And I'm sure that a lot of folks will snap it up because it's so interesting to see the ones that I've seen so far. And I'm sure it's going to be, when it's finished, going to be a beautiful collection of her photography of what you gals are doing.
It's been fun. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us, Mary. We appreciate it. Any questions before Mary signs off? Any questions? Oh, Mary, do you have any guests that are close by you want to say hello?
Actually, they're on a tour that I didn't take so that I could give you a final wrap-up. But I have seen some of the stuff that these people were on their way to see before, so I was in good shape.
Okay.
But,
I've got a question for Mary.
I'm by myself right now.
Well, Mary, Bill Joseph has got a question for you. Bill, go ahead.
Mary, I'm out here on Interstate 70, and I was wondering if you were going back to St. Louis, whether you'd be coming through up here on I-70.
You know, I probably will be coming back 40. I'm not sure yet because it depends on who's caravanning with me, and also we also like to take a little time on our way back to stop in and see some relatives.
so I haven't really mapped the plan out yet. But when I have it in your part of the world, Bill, I'll holler at you, and you can come see her. I'll meet you somewhere, and you can come see her, because she's cute inside.
Well, I'm literally right on I-70. Anytime you're coming through this part of Colorado, you give us a holler.
You bet.
I'm going to open up every microphone, and we've got hundreds of callers on my board. And Lord knows what kind of background noise we're going to have when I open all of these microphones. And so if anyone would like to say hello to Mary or ask a question of Mary, please do so right now. It's your chance to be heard around the world.
Well, now, Mary, I think if you ever do this again, that you ought to take some hay boys with you. To be able to carry the garbage out and to set up the tents, you know, and to keep the Indians away.
There you go.
Gosh, I think that's a great idea. But listen, if your significant others, wives, girlfriends, whatever, they are, a couple times a year, we all have the sisters get to take their misters with them, and they have a great time. So there are possibilities for you, dear.
Sounds great.
Only John could think of that.
Everybody loves having a possibility.
Well, you know, it's great to have one of ours among the crowd. And when I say one of ours, Eastern Airlines, because Mary has represented Eastern Airlines extremely well. And boy, I tell you what, if Ed Weigel, president of Eastern Airlines, or his mother, who usually listens in, here's this broadcast. I tell you what, with folks like Mary and some of our other listeners, most of our other listeners, they've got a heck of a fan club. They really do.
Mary.
Well, it's been, yes, dear.
This is Isabel from Miami, from EARA.
Yes.
Do you see? Do you think you can send something to EARA@AOL.com so we can do a little article about it for the paper, for the kid paper?
Oh, sure, dear. It may be just a little while till I get back home, if that's okay.
Yes, fine.
Great. Right.
Absolutely.
Why should we take all of the credit for Mary's trip? We'll share a little bit with EARA Isabella.
Yes.
We'll share. It's great that we do have people like that, Mary, and she's having a great time. And I tell you what, I envy. I love to travel like that. And we've seen, especially pilots, have seen all of it from 35,000, 37,000, 41,000 in the 757s. And we've seen it all from above. But there's no better view than to take the highway or Route 66. And I've done it, I think, three times in my lifetime. Traveled out to L.A. and, of course, out to the Pacific Northwest, and it's beautiful country. What a great country and beautiful country we have. We don't need
and
to
you
go
know,
anywhere
Neil,
else.
I leave you with this one thought. It just reinforces in Mary what a fantastic country the United States is. And state to state and all the people that I have met and had the privilege of interacting with just reaffirms to me that, you know what, we have a great future, and we've got a lot of good people, and that excites me.
Absolutely.
And on
Absolutely.
That note, I'll go to dinner.
Goodbye, Mary. Thanks so much. We'll see you again on your return fortune.
Take care.
Okay. I've got one joke that I want to contribute about Route 66. Perhaps it's not exactly on Route 66, but I think it's on Route 40 or Interstate 10. About the pilot and making the announcement to the passengers that as they were going from Atlanta to Los Angeles, about they were coming up on the meteor crater out in Arizona, and he told the passengers that on the left side they would see this big, huge area, round area where a meteor impacted the Earth years and years ago. And the flight attendant was walking down the aisle when she heard it also. And she kind of looked over the passenger that was at the window in one of the rows. And she looked down and she saw what the pilot was announcing. And she said, "My God, how close it came to the highway down there." That's my joke.
I bet she was blonde too, wasn't she?
Might have been.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, that's our report on Route 66. And I could play this song to sign her off, but it's going to fade into the real gently. We'll say that Mary is
on the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends.
I had to play that again. But now into our program. Anybody else have any comments before we get serious? And when I say serious, we're talking about a pilot that everyone with Eastern Airlines had heard of. Some were fortunate enough to have flown with him. Our tribute tonight of Captain Dick Merrill. And so I want to start off with this little poem that George Jent sent me, and I thought it was worthy of reading because it reminds us of a day long ago. And that is, by the way, we've got a lot of background noise, but maybe that might be just well to drown out some of the lyrics here or the sentences here. But it's called the Age of the 707. That smoke is from a 1,700-pound water injection that the 7J57s use for takeoff. They go to the overrun and suck the gear up. And most pilots know what I'm talking about there. Those were the good old days. Pilots back then were men that didn't want to be women or girly men. Pilots all knew who Jimmy Doolittle was. Pilots drank coffee, whiskey, smoked cigars, and didn't wear digital watches. They carried their own suitcases and brain bags like the real men they were. Pilots didn't bend over into the crash position multiple times each day in front of the passengers at security so that some previously unemployed government agent could probe the with tweezers or fingernail clippers or too much toothpaste. Pilots did not go through the terminal impersonating caddy, pulling a bunch of golf clubs, computers, guitars, and feed bags full of tofu and granola on a sissy trailer with no hat and granny glasses hanging on a pink string around their pencil neck while talking to their personal trainer on the cell phone. Being an airline captain was as good as being the king in a Mel Brooks movie. All the stewardesses, also known as flight attendants, were young, attractive, single women that were proud to be combatants in the sexual revolution. They didn't have to turn sideways, grease up and suck it in to get through the cockpit door. They would blush and say thank you when told that they looked good instead of filing a sexual harassment claim. Junior stewardesses shared a room and talked about men with no thoughts of substitution. Passengers wore nice clothes and were polite. They could speak and understand English. They didn't speak gibberish or listen to loud gangster rap on their iPods. They bathed and didn't smell like a pile of garbage in a jogging suit and flip-flops. Children didn't travel alone, commuting between trailer parks. There were no biggest losers asking for a seatbelt extension or a scotch and grapefruit juice cocktail with a twist. If the captain wanted to throw some offensive ranting jerk off the airplane, it was done without any worries of a lawsuit or getting fired. Axial flow engines crackled with the sound of freedom and left an impressive black smoke trail like a locomotive burning soft coal. Jet fuel was cheap, and once the throttles were pushed up, they were left there. After all, it was a jet age, and the idea was to go fast. The economy cruise was something in the performance book, but no one knew why or where it was. When the clocker went off, no one got all tight and scared because Boeing built it out of iron. Nothing was going to fall off, and that sound had the same effect on real pilots then as Viagra does now for those new age guys. There was very little plastic and no composites on the airplanes or the stewardess's pectoral regions. Airplanes and women had eye-pleasing symmetrical curves, not a bunch of ugly vortex generators, ventral fins, winglets, flow diverters, tattoos, rings in their nose, tongues, and eyebrows. Airlines were run by men like Eddie Rickenbacker, C.R. Smith, Juan Tripp, and Bob Six, who had built their companies virtually from scratch, knew most of their employees by name, and were lifetime airline employees themselves, not pseudo financiers and bean counters who fill from one occupation to another for a few bucks, a better parachute, or a fancier title, while fervently believing that they are a class of beings unto themselves. Aircraft were flown by men like Dick Merrill, Gene Brown, Johnny Title, and thousands of others from many different cockpits, which in the day were open to the elements. And so it was back then, and never will be again. Damn, flying is the second greatest thrill known to man. What is first, you ask?
Landing.
Landing, of course. And then with this lead off, our program tonight is about one of these famous aviators from the Eastern history books, his name, Captain Dick Merrill, who was a pilot's pilot. See?
Henry Tyndall Dick Merrill was an early aviation pioneer, and among his feats, he was the high-speed air mail pilot, and he flew the first round-trip transatlantic flight in 1936, and he was Dwight David Eisenhower's personal pilot during the 1952 presidential elections, and he set several speed records and would go on the Eastern Airlines' most experienced pilot with over 36,000 hours until his retirement in 1961 in total. Merrill flew over 45,000 hours as pilot in command, covering over 8 million miles at a time when record-breaking pilots were treated as celebrities. Pioneer aviators like Dick Merrill gained a unique status. His most famous flight was in 1936 round-trip transatlantic flight that has gone down in the annals of flight as the ping pong flight. The following year, Merrill also completed the commercial transatlantic flight. Born in February 1, 1894, in Iuka, pronounced Iuka, Mississippi, Dick Merrill was born into a family that prided itself as being descended from the famous frontier pioneer Daniel Boone. Although the full name was Henry Tyndall, the name Dick was a childhood moniker that stuck with him for life, through though up to a devout Catholic, he was a teetotaler in an age where the hard-drinking, fun-loving aerial adventurer was seen as the norm. Considered very easygoing yet serious, he had one formidable, however. His one formidable, however, was that he was an inveterate gambler throughout his life. And more about that from on a personal basis later on. Merrill had, from an early age, been intrigued by the exploits of the first flyers. And when he enlisted in World War I, he began learning to fly while stationed in France, but returned home to work on the Illinois Central Railroad as a fireman. Bill. Bill.
I'm not certain what happened to Bill here, but Bill, are you with us?
Well, Neil, Merrill began his aviation career in earnest when he purchased a war surplus Curtiss JN-4 Jenny in Columbus, Georgia in 1920 for $600, flying it at air shows through the 1920s, briefly appearing with Ivan Gates Air Circus in the mid-1920s. He eventually turned this into a career as an airmail pilot, flying the Richmond to Atlanta night route. By 1930, Merrill held the record for flying the longest cumulative distance and became the highest paid airmail pilot, earning $13,000 in 1930 to at 10 cents per mile. Eddie Rickenbacker later called him the best commercial pilot in the United States. Unlike some of his peers, Merrill was a deliberate and careful pilot, so well regarded that many celebrities and his friend Walter Winchell and even General Eisenhower during the 1952 presidential campaign specifically requested him as a personal pilot. Merrill always could chalk up successful flights more to luck than skill. A later compatriot, Meriton Meade, related an antidote that summed up Merrill's flying luck. Dick often said he'd rather be lucky than good. When Eddie Rickenbacker owned Eastern Airlines, he always insisted on Dick flying the airplane whenever he had to travel. Dick always told this story, "But Captain, you've got 100 pilots in the line and better than me." "I know, Merrill, but you're the luckiest son of a bitch I've got. And I'd rather fly behind a lucky pilot than a good one any day." Typical self-effacing comment by Dick. I doubt that there was ever a better airline pilot than Dick Merrill. The ping pong flight. He had planned this transatlantic flight for some time, but was unable to finance it to pay as an Eastern Airlines pilot. Things changed when he met millionaire singer Harry Richman, famed for putting on the Ritz. After taking in the singer's show in Miami, Merrill planted the idea for a round-trip flight of the Atlantic, and he brazenly declared that they will take the plane back to Europe. Then we'll gas her up and fly back, and it's never been done. Richman, who had recently gained a pilot's license, had been able to secure a Volte V-1A capable of making the flight. The aircraft NC-13770 had digitally been built for Lieutenant Colonel George R. Hutchison's proposed all-freight New York to London Moscow airline, which never started up. Since then, it had served a number of pilots in various record-setting flights. In 1935, Jimmy Doolittle used the aircraft to make a record 11-hour and 59-minute transcontinental flight, and 6 weeks later, Leland Andrews repeated the flight, then used it to set up a long-distance speed record between Los Angeles and Mexico City. Merrill and Richmond extensively modified the Vaulty V-1A for the flight. Using Eastern Airlines mechanics, Merrill had extra fuel tanks installed and 1,000-horsepower Wright Cyclone with two-bladed constant speed prop fitted. The most modern equipment was sought out, including Hovind radio direction finders licensed to Bendix, and it was Richmond's idea to fill empty spaces in the wings and fuselage with 41,000 ping pong balls, which it was hoped would allow the aircraft to float if it was forced down in the ocean. After modifications were carried out, they took off for London in September 2, 1936. The two aviators were an odd couple, with Richmond flamboyant while Merrill was always the studied professional. In a later interview, Merrill revealed a particular predilection to perfume. When flying, he usually had a vial of Surrender or Evening in Paris in his pocket, stealing the occasional sniff over the Atlantic. When they were 600 miles off the coast of England, the pair ran into bad weather and eventually decided to put down in Llandilo, now spelled Llandilo, Wales, about 175 miles west of London. The flight took 18 hours and 36 minutes, the fastest Atlantic crossing to date. The next day, Merrill and Richmond completed their flight to London. While in England, Richmond flew Ever the Showman, christened the Vaulty the Lady Peace. On September 14th, they began the return flight from Southport, England, and during the flight, while bucking headwinds, Richmond decided to dump 500 gallons of fuel, leaving them with insufficient fuel to make New York. Furious with Richmond that Richmond had panicked, Merrill was forced to put down in a soft bog at Musgrove Harbor, Newfoundland. After minor repairs and refueling, a week later they landed in New York. The usually easygoing relationship between the two pilots had been strained, but they ended up as friends again. The round-trip flight cost Richmond $360,000 and is known in aviation history as the ping pong flight. Richmond sold his autographed ping pong balls from the flight for years after.
In 1937, Merrill was hired by Hearst Publishing to repeat the flight, co-piloted by 27-year-old Jack Lambie in a Lockheed Model 10E Electra dubbed the Daily Express. The flight from New York to London, May 8th through the 14th, 1937, known as the Anglo-American Goodwill Coronation Flight, was also recognized as the first commercial transatlantic round-trip flight. Hearst wanted to scoop other American newspapers by acquiring photographs of the May 10th, 1937 coronation of King George VI, after the abduction of his brother, King Edward VIII. Merrill carried photos, not newsreels, as often claimed, of the Hindenburg disaster, which occurred shortly before the flight. first papers on both sides of the Atlantic published the first pictures of each event. And Merrill earned the Harmon Trophy for 1937 for his achievement. Footage from this flight was used to make the 1937 monogram movie Atlantic Flight. Both Dick Merrill and Jack Lambie, his real-life Coronation Flight co-pilot and co-star in the film, received $2,500 for their roles in this movie. Dick had not taken the filming seriously, but gladly accepted the windfall. Ever the invert gambler, Merrill blew his entire salary at the Santa Anita the weekend after the shooting wrapped. Merrill made two more transatlantic flights. The last of these on May 14, 1937, set the new record at 24 hours and 25 seconds.
Now famous, Merrill thoroughly enjoyed his celebrity and loved the nightlife and hobnob with both the famous and infamous. Although earning a good salary, he habitually was broke due to gambling. He had become a fixture at the parties of the rich and famous, and it was at one of these that he met Toby Wing, a chorus girl who became a movie star, appearing in 52 features and shorts. The two married in Tijuana in 1938, but her parents objected to this sort of marriage, so they were married a second time at the home of Sid Shannon, an early Eastern Airlines investor. His marriage finally turned around, and his financial woes, and he became devoted to his new wife. Merrill was 22 years Wing's senior, and shortly after their marriage, she met Bob Hope, who joked, "Toby, it's nice to see you, and I'm glad to see you brought your father along." According to Wing, Merrill never forgave Hope for the insult. After a Broadway run, Toby retired from show business the next year, and the couple moved to Miami, where Merrill flew the Eastern Airlines Miami-New York runs with occasional flights to South America. World War II, Merrill was too old to be commissioned during World War II and instead signed on as a civilian pilot and flew the China-Burma-India hump in DC-3 C-47 Skytrains and C-46 Commandos, flying the hump over the Himalaya Mountains to transport desperately needed supplies to troops in China from bases in India and Burma was extremely dangerous. CBI crews faced severe adverse conditions at the top of the world, coupled with unpredictable weather, lack of radio aids, direction finders, and Japanese fighter opposition. On the ground, engineering and maintenance nightmares resulted due to a shortage of trained air and ground personnel and poorly equipped airfields that were often wiped out by monsoon rains.
Dick Merrill returned to Eastern Airlines after the war, becoming a senior pilot with the airline, and in 1948, at 10,000 feet off the Florida coast, Merrill's calm and skillful management of an in-flight emergency was evident when a propeller on a Eastern Airlines Constellation tore through the fuselage and killed a steward instantly. Merrill was credited with saving the lives of 69 people on board that aircraft. In 1953, he piloted an Eastern Airlines Super Constellation in an aviation promotional movie called Flying with Arthur Godfrey. And with Godfrey as a narrator, he would officially retire from Eastern Airlines on October 3, 1961, after flying a Douglas DC-8 from New York to Miami. At retirement, he reputedly had flown the longest cumulative distance of any pilot in command aviation history, in commercial aviation history, and ranked as the second most senior pilot with the airline after 36,650 hours flown over a period of 33 years. Merrill continued flying for pleasure into his 80s, setting several additional records. In 1966, he flew his actor friend Arthur Godfrey in an around-the-world flight, set a speed record delivering a Lockheed L-1011 from California to Miami at an average 710 miles per hour ground speed. And in 1968, and flew the Concorde on one occasion. In 1970, he was awarded the FAI Gold Air Medal. After retirement from active flying, Merrill managed the Shannon Airport Museum in Fredericksburg, Virginia, during the late 1970s and early 1980s. After moving west, Merrill died at Lake Elsinore, California, October 31st, 1982, at the age of 88. Toby Wing, Merrill, was still beside him at his passing. Toby Wing would spend the remainder of her life actively promoting her husband's rightful place in the annals of aviation history. That concludes our biography of Dick Merrill, who, by the way, is one of the early choices of the Hall of Fame and the Eastern Airlines radio show's Hall of Fame, which includes, of course, Eddie Rickenbacker and Floyd Hall and Dick Merrill and one other I can't think right now offhand. But at any rate, one of the stories that I have to tell, and it's not so much about Dick Merrill, but if you would go to the Internet and look up his lovely wife, Toby Merrill, just type in Toby Merrill and look for images, and there you will see one of the most beautiful women Hollywood ever had on the big screen. What a beautiful, beautiful woman she was. And I had the pleasure of having her on a flight from Los Angeles to Atlanta. And the story is this. I had taken my two children. I guess Scott was about 13. My daughter was about 10. And we went out to L.A., and we had a nice long layover in Los Angeles where I took them on a bicycle ride around Marina del Rey and what have you. All the fun that the kids wanted to do, we tried to quickly enjoy on that layover. And on the way back, I was flying captain on the airplane. My son and my daughter were out in the waiting lobby to board the flight. So I wanted to find out how they were doing and whether we had a full crowd of people, whether they were going to make the flight back to Atlanta. And I went out in the lobby and I saw my daughter and she said, Dad, she said, you didn't give me enough money. And, of course, I had given them a few dollars to spend. But I said, what do you mean I didn't give you enough money? And she said, well, I went over to the little gift shop there that had candy and cookies and books and all that. There at the TWA area that we shared with TWA. And I had not given her enough money, and she said, I bought some candy, and I didn't have enough money. And she said, I said, well, how much did you lack? And she said, 10 cents. She didn't have enough money. And she said, that man over there gave me a dime. And that man was Mickey Rooney. Mickey Rooney. And so I thought, my golly, here she's met the star of Gunsmoke when we took her through Universal, and now Mickey Rooney in the terminal. And then when we got on the airplane, I went back to see how they were doing in the cabin. And lo and behold, the flight attendants had put both of them in first class. And in the seat in front of my son and my daughter was this beautiful, radiant, gorgeous woman, Toby Wing. What a beautiful lady she was. And Of course, I didn't say anything. I just said a hello and went to the cockpit. And when we got back home, I said, did you see that pretty woman that was sitting in front of you? Yeah. Yeah, we saw a lady with white hair. And I said, her name was Toby Wing, Dick Merrill's wife. That's how I seen. I met Dick Merrill one time in my life, and that was when he came through as an ambassador promoting PR Eastern Airlines through the Atlanta terminal. So that's my experience with Dick Merrill. Never had the pleasure of flying with him, but I've had the pleasure of talking about him. Any other comments about Dick Merrill or Toby Wing?
I don't want to jump the gun or anything, but I had the privilege of having him on one of my flights. And there was first class, which is where I was working, was absolutely full. And so when they were, I don't even remember where we were flying from because it was a long trip, but it was on the 727. And the agents put him right across the from the galley in coach. And since I was working first class, I offered him drinks. I offered him, you know, anything that I could because I knew the reputation. I had never heard, the name always came before the man. And now I know the reason why he never drank. He never accepted a drink from me. But he was such a gentleman, and I was just, you know, it was like meeting a legend. You didn't know really, I mean, I had to have been in my early 20s, and I had no idea. I mean, I'd heard the name really until tonight. I mean, I knew the reputation, but I didn't realize what all he had done. So, thank you, Eastern Radio.
Okay. Well, you know, Dick Merrill gained reputation way back when he flew the mail wing, open cockpit airplane, the Pitcairn mail wing. And he had a companion on a lot of those flights. One was a lion, L-I-O-N, that he raised from a cub up until the time that I guess it overgrossed the airplane and he no longer could take his lion with him in the back seat of his airplane, the Pitcairn mail wing open cockpit. And then he got a flying squirrel, I guess literally it was a flying squirrel, and sat on his shoulder and he actually took that into a hotel with him on a layover. And someone recognized Dick Merrill because as he marched through the lobby of the hotel, there was his little squirrel. But a fascinating character and really a real-life pilot, a pilot's pilot. He was a gambler, and like Steve said earlier, he was a compulsive gambler, really not doing too well at the tables, lost a lot of money. But with his connection with his lovely wife, Toby Merrill, he was able to do a flight about the flight to Europe on the Atlantic flight. I think that's what it's called, and you can go on the Internet, and you can just type in Atlantic flight. And there you'll see Dick Merrill actually acting as himself in that movie. It was really not an A movie or a B movie, probably more toward the C class, but he flew that portion of the movie as himself. So it's interesting to go back on the Internet and pick up some of the old films of Dick Merrill. I always thought of him as George Raft, and a lot of us older folks remember George Raft as a movie star that was a very nice-looking man, and so was Dick Merrill. But we were fortunate enough, when I say we, Eastern Airlines was fortunate enough to have him as, for many, many, many years, the number two person in seniority and the most sought after pilot to fly their airplane if a flight on Eastern Airlines was from Miami to New York or New York to Miami or wherever it was. The first choice was not the flight or the time of day. It was the captain himself, Captain Dick Merrill. So tonight we salute you, Dick Merrill. You are a hero of Eastern, a legend of Eastern Airlines, the types of pilots that Eastern Airlines turned out through the many, many years. And but you were the face, if I could use one face of Eastern Airlines as far as the pilot ranks. And, of course, we have the mechanics, we have the reservationists, and all the folks of Eastern Airlines. But as far as the air, the pilots, the face of Dick Merrill would be the one that I would choose to represent the pilots of Eastern. He was a grand pilot. So that's all the comments I have to make tonight. Talk too long. But any other comments from our host or guest, our listeners? I'll open up all the microphones before we sign off. So please do.
Neil, it's Cecile here. That was really an interesting story. Very, very interesting.
Oh, very Cecile, you're going to tell us a little bit about the flight in October. Can you please tell us about that?
Yes, and maybe next week we can talk about the honor flight that just happened.
Yeah, please, the honor flight. Yeah.
Okay. All right, for those that are listening, we're collecting a $150 deposit to reserve your seat. First come, first serve. First class is almost full. We already have requests for first. Some are on standby. The address, if you need it, you can email me or Neil. Send Neil on the radio show a note, and he'll forward it to me. After you send your money, I send a receipt. And basically, I've called about 20 people over the weekend, and they were just sitting on the fence. So I told them, if you want to get off the fence, you better send the dollars. And I think Neil is going to be inundated with dollars this week. So please get your money in. We're targeting October, first or second week. And that's it, Neil. Back to you.
Okay. Well, I can give a teaser here. Cecile went with her grandson. Is that correct, Cecile?
I have to say great grandson.
Oh my God, like great grandson. You took your great grandson, and he saw history made in that they were there with the honor flight that left Miami for Washington, D.C., with all of our World War II veterans. And we'll talk more about that, like Cecile said, in our next trip.
Neil?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Neil.
I wasn't on the plane, just so you know. I was there greeting the passengers. Isabella was there, and she's with Ira, and maybe next week we can all tell you about the exciting day.
Look forward to it. John?
Steve had one final story he wanted to tell.
Please do.
Can you hear me, Neil?
Yes, I can hear you, Steve.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had one memorable flight with Dick Merrill, and it was in the late 50s. And it was a charter flight with a group from LaGuardia to Albany over to a racetrack whose name I don't remember. And it was for a very famous racetrack gathering. And I had never been to a horse race before. And he showed me how to bet, and I won, I think, about $30, $40. But it was a really, really fun trip, and I knew of his reputation, and it was just a really an enjoyable event to be able to fly with Dick Merrill as a co-pilot. I didn't get to fly a leg, which I wanted to so badly. He flew both of them, but it was just a real pleasure just to be with him.
Well, it's kind of like flying co-pilot with John Wayne, right, Steve?
That's correct.
Couldn't be any better. I don't think John Wayne knew how to fly an airplane, but at any rate, He was the hero of Eastern Airlines, as far as I'm concerned. Of course,
yes.
Number one on the seniority list, which we didn't state, was Eugene Brown. Gene Brown. I was hired a few months before Dick Merrill, and lasted a long, long time. I think he was number one seniority list when I came with the company, and I'm sure he was number one, Steve, when you were with the company, and he remained
yes.
that way for many, many years. And two great men in their flying machines that made it all happen with Eastern Airlines. And now we're starting all over anew, not in mail wings, but in a beautiful Boeing 737-800. And we wish the new company great success. And you've got one hell of a big shoe to fill. And that is the old Eastern Airlines. And I wish you well. I hope you make it. Okay, I think that's about all I've got to talk about. So with that, if Bill Joseph is still on the line.
I'm here, Neil. Can you hear me there?
Yes, I can.
Well, there's that music again. Where does the time go? That's our show for tonight, folks. Well, we'll be back with you the next week, same time and same station. www.ealradioshow.com. And like one of our popular Eastern commercials, we have to earn our wings every day. We hope we are doing so here at the EAL Radio Show. Next week, we hope you'll once again fly Eastern Radio as we can bring you more Eastern news, history, and talk with former Eastern employees and friends of Eastern. Be sure to tune in and call in at 7 p.m. when Flight 220 departs the gate for a new adventure. Be on board for the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. From all the gang here at our studio and remote locations, we all say, all together, good night,
good
Eastern
night,
family.
Eastern.
Good night, Eastern family.
See
good night,
you
Eastern
next
family.
Week.
See you next week, Neil.
Good night, Vito.